Yud Gimel Kislev, Tuesday the 13th of December, Dr. Sholem Spinger, a Hanukkah theme, A Tale of Two Houses.
Good morning to you all. Let's start with a Gemara, which says the following, makes the following remark. Omar Rav Asi, Lomon Nim Shelo Esther Lashacha. Why is Esther compared to dawn? Loimaloch, Mashacha, Sofkola, Lailo, to tell us that in the same way as Shacha, dawn, is the end of the night, it heralds the end of the night, Af Esther, Sofkola Nisim. So Esther is the termination of all the Nisim that we have enjoyed from Mitzrayim onwards. Esther is the culmination of the Nisim. So the Gemara asks the obvious question, well, Ika Chanukah, but Chanukah, as you know, historically came later. The story of Esther is between the Bote Mikdoshois. Those are our two houses, of course. Yeah, between the Bote Mikdoshois, so at the end of the 70 years of interregnum between Bais Rish and Bais Sheni. And the story of Chanukah takes place in the middle of Bais Sheni, which is about 250 years later. So how can you say it's the end of the Nisim, Oika Chanukah? So the Gemara answers a very sort of cryptic answer, and it says, Lichtoiv, I'm talking about the Nisim that were written down and became part of the Tanakh. Yeah, and that, of course, is with Esther. Esther is part of the Tanakh, whereas we don't have a book for Chanukah. There is Megillas Yevonis, but it was never accepted as part of the Tanakh. And so I'm talking about Nisim, says the Gemara, about those Nisim that were written down and became part of the Tanakh, rather than a nest that happened later, and therefore, because it's not Nitinli Kosev, it's different in some way. And of course, this raises a number of questions immediately, because it seems to describe that the end of the Nisim, ending up with the Ness of Esther, as Sof HaLaila, and that's the very opposite of what I would have thought it should be. Of course, that's the glorious period from Mitzrayim and onwards and downwards, etc., all the Nisim that we enjoyed. I wouldn't have described that as the night, and then when Chanukah arrived, described that as the day. It seems to be the wrong way round. And so why describe it in that way? In a certain measure, we shall see that a little later on, there seems to have been more light, so to speak, after Purim than there was before Purim. And the significance of Nitinli Kosev, whether it is included in the Torah, whether it isn't included in the Torah, why does that diminish from the Ness? Why does that make the Ness, the miracle of Chanukah, any different or lower or lesser than the Ness of Purim? Because it's not actually inscribed in the Torah. Why does it affect the quality of the Ness? So there seems to be some sort of divide between the quality, the character of the Ness that we enjoy on Purim, or we celebrate on Purim, and the Ness that we talk about on Chanukah. Finally, last question on this Mama Chazal, and also all the celebrations on Chanukah, is we got two Nisim that happened on Chanukah. One is the victory over the Greeks. A little band, Matisyahu and his men, actually carried out a battle, decided to do battle with the Greeks, and they won. And that's a tremendous Ness, because it was, as we say in Al Anisim, Rabim Ma'atim, etc., and all the other list of wonderful parts of that miracle, that there was marvelous things going on. And so therefore there is a lot to celebrate in the war. The victory in the war was an enormous victory, and a most unexpected victory in a certain sense, because as we know, the Chashmonoi were prepared to give their lives. They didn't really expect to win. They just did what they have to do, and they did it, and they won. So why don't we celebrate, have some sort of celebrations about the war? We seem to concentrate on Chanukah, the miracle of the lights. You all know what the miracle of lights is. It burned for 8 days when it should have only burned for one day, but we only concentrate on that, and we don't seem to ignore completely the war. So we've got a number of different horrors on this Chazal and the celebration of Chanukah. Let us go on with another quotation. Omar Chazal, even though the Shechina was not Shoyre or present in Bayis Sheni, Mikol Mokoim Ika HaTayre V'Zivo V'Hadoro V'Lohoyo Ele B'Bayis Sheni. There was something, some radiance, some glory of the Bayis Sheni, which was even greater than Bayis Rishon. Shalirotzu Livnois Ad Shivtichon Hashem Yisborach legalos lohem rozei haTorah. When it came to building the second base of Migdash, after that 70 years of space between the first base of Migdash and the building of the second base of Migdash under Ezra, there was some bargaining that the Rabbeinu Shalom did with Klal Yisrael, and they sort of seemed to understand that the Shekhinah would not be Shaira in the same way as it was in the first base of Migdash, that it wouldn't be like that in the second base of Migdash. So, for example, we know many of the miracles that were present in the first base of Migdash were not present in the second base of Migdash. But there was some bargaining going on that even though the Shekhinah wouldn't be there, the fact is that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, through agencies, promised Klal Yisrael, although the Shekhinah won't be there, but there will be certain Rozei HaTorah. You will be given the keys, the secrets of the Torah, and that should be in exchange for the Shekhinah being present. And obviously, I mean, it's a very, very strange exchange. Would you give up the Shekhinah, you know, in a place, in one's house, for being given the Rozei HaTorah, perhaps, if the Rozei HaTorah are, so to speak, valuable enough for us? So we need to understand that what these Rozei HaTorah are, and in fact what they are, what they were in fact a concentration and an elevation of Torah Shebal Peh. That was what's going on. Chanukah is the Yom Tov of Torah Shebal Peh, as we know, and Purim is the Yom Tov of Torah Shebiksav. You know, the word Kosav occurs many, many times in Megillah, and the whole thing centers on the Megillah, while Chanukah doesn't have a Megillah, doesn't have anything written, because Chanukah is the Yom Tov of Torah Shebal Peh. So their main concentration of the Chachomim and the way they taught was, in the second base of Migdash, Torah Shebal Peh. So what is all this difference that we'd like to know about by Srishan, by Sheni? And we do find, in fact, that the Shekhinah was present in Bayis Sheni. So although I've said from Chazal's that the Shekhinah wasn't present in Bayis Sheni, and they did this deal to obtain the Rozei HaTorah, the secrets and the keys of the Torah, and that would be the exchange for not having the Shekhinah in the second base of Migdash, they'd get these keys instead. On the other hand, we do find that in fact the Shekhinah was present in Bayis Sheni. Let me read you another Gemara. Masiv Rav Sheshis. It says in the Pasuk, Michutz laparoiches or edus yaroich, so that's where the menorah should be. The menorah in the base of Mikdash should be just outside the paroiches. So inside the paroiches was the Kodesh Kodoshim and the Oroch, and then outside on the other side of the paroiches, parallel to it, was the menorah. That's the instruction from the Torah. And the Gemara asks, V'chila ayruhu tzorich, does the Rabbeinu Shalom need a menorah in the Kodesh, in that place, in the Mishkan, which was a dark place, but it was lit up by the menorah. Throughout the 40 years that Klal Yisrael were in the Midbar, who was doing the lighting up? Well, the lighting up was done by Hocha Ella La'eroi. It was being done by the light that was given by the Rabbeinu Shalom, the Eish at night, the cloud during the day, etc. Ella Eidus Hu Leboi Oilom. This is Eidus. The menorah is Eidus for anyone that wants to come and see or hear about it, Shashchinah Shoyer B'Yisroel. That the Shekhinah was Shoyer B'Yisroel, that it was there among Klal Yisroel. My Eidus, what is this Eidus? Amar Rav, Zu Ne'emar Rovi. The Ne'emar Rovi was the Western Light, we're in the Machlokes and the Gemara, which one it was, whether it was the center one or to one side, and that then determined the orientation of the menorah, whether east-west or north-south. Not important for us at the moment. There was a light called the Ne'emar Rovi, and the Ne'emar Rovi was lit first, Boshem and Bemidas Chavruseho, that the amount of oil that was put into all seven lamps in the lamps of the Beis HaMikdash of that menorah, all had a Revius Halug put into their containers, and so did the Ne'emar Rovi. Only the Ne'emar Rovi displayed a miracle day by day. What happened with the Ne'emar Rovi, this light? That even though they got the same amount of oil, that what happened was that with the Ne'emar Rovi it was lit first, and then all the others were lit, and then all the others stayed alight for the night, they burnt through the night, and by dawn they were out. But the Ne'emar Rovi carried on burning all that day until nightfall, and so therefore the Hatovas Aneiros, the cleaning out of the lamps, was done in all the other, for all the other lights during the day, But the Kohen Gadol had to wait for the Hatovos HaNeiros, the Hatovos of the Ner, of the Ner Marovi, until nightfall. So it started and ended with the Ner Marovi. That's what the Gemara is saying. So we see from this Gemara quite clearly that there was the Shekhinah and there were miracles in the second bias as well. So why are we saying that it was only in the first bias and not in the second? So this is all a little bit puzzling. And just to read you just one more Chazal, which is Rashi in Yuma. Eidus Zusha Shekhinah Shoyba Yisrael. Rashi just explains that this Eidus, that the Shekhinah was present in Klal Yisrael, Loi Hoysa BeBeis HaMikdash Rishon Bilvad. It wasn't only, of course it did happen in the Beis HaMikdash Rishon, but also, and also it happened in the second Beis HaMikdash. And so therefore we see from here that it seems that there was some sort of Shekhinah in the second Beis HaMikdash as well. So let's just draw all this together and draw our conclusions. We draw the conclusion, and this is the Sifse Chaim speaking now, and he's saying that we draw from all of this that there are two types of Hashroas HaShekhinah. There's a Hashroas HaShekhinah of a very explicit sort. In the first Beis HaMikdash, everything was very open, there were 10 miracles, etc., and you could see a great deal of evidence of Hashroas HaShekhinah. And then in the second Beis HaMikdash, there was a sort of quieter Hashroas HaShekhinah, where that which we're talking about, which is the Ner that was doilek all night, Ebenes, that Ner Marovi, of course you couldn't go to see it. Only the Kohenim could see it. So it was one that was much more toned down. There was a different type of Hashroas HaShekhinah in the second Beis HaMikdash. Now we mentioned before that Klal Yisrael refused to build the Beis HaMikdash unless the Shekhinah resided in Bayis Sheni. And after all, if we think about it, that is the tachlis of the Beis HaMikdash, is in order that there should be Hashroas HaShekhinah in Klal Yisrael. As it says, V'osu li mikdash, v'shechanti b'soy chom, the Gemara darshans, b'soy choy loy nema, ela b'soy chom. The whole idea is that through the Beis HaMikdash, we should be able to absorb Hashroas HaShekhinah through the agency of the Beis HaMikdash. That's the whole idea. And now you tell me that there's not going to be a Shekhinah in the Beis HaMikdash, the whole purpose seems to have somehow been undermined in some way. So the fact is, as we mentioned before, that Chazal tell us they settled for Rozei HaTorah. So why are the Rozei HaTorah a good exchange for that sort of Hashroas HaShekhinah that we had? So we must conclude that the fact is that these rozim of Torah mean that we're going to have an increase of Torah, and it's Torah Shebal Peh, that is what's going to happen, is a valid alternative to this Hashroas HaShekhinah that we had in a very displayed manner, in a very obvious manner in the first place of Mikdash, and somehow getting Torah Shebal Peh in that way was a good, it was a fair exchange that would maintain Klal Yisrael as it was. That the Vilna Gaon tells us that, and others say the same, the Maharal, for example, tell us that the Ribbono Shel Olam reveals himself in two very distinct ways. It's slightly Kabbalistic. There, the terms are Isarusa de Le'ela and Isarusa de Le Tato. Isarusa de Le'ela means when we receive something from a Kodesh Baruch Hu, which is from above, and we haven't earned it. So we are told that the first Beis HaMikdash was given to us as a freebie. We never earned the Beis HaMikdash. In fact, it was the Ovis. B'schus Ovis, that's why we got the first Beis HaMikdash. Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov, they were the ones, and their schusim merited us to get that first Beis HaMikdash. Whereas the second Beis HaMikdash was Isarusa L'Tato, which means that comes up from below, which is that we, ourselves, Klal Yisrael, earned that Beis HaMikdash through their own efforts. There's a very interesting result of that concept. In the first Beis HaMikdash, because it was all something that was free, that was directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, then of course we got all those wonderful miracles. And they all came free, and a person could go to Yerushalayim, they could go to the Beis HaMikdash, and get inspired by seeing some of the miracles, you could see some of them, and then go back home to his farmstead and be completely in Mechuzuk and in all sorts of ways. And that's why a person went to the Beis HaMikdash. The second Beis HaMikdash, the miracles were more hidden, and the Kavod Hashem was not something that was that obvious. But on the other hand, there was something very important about that hidden Hashroas HaShekhinah. The Maharal explains very interestingly that the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash and the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash follow the pattern of the fact that the first one was free, Isarusa de Leila, and the second one was Beskus Klal Yisrael. And he explains as follows, I'll do it briefly. He says that because we're talking about Avraham, Yitzchak and Yaakov, they started doing all sorts of averus at the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, and we know that they did Shvichas Domim, Gilui Aroyos, Avodah Zarah. They did the three cardinal sins. And because of those three sins that they did, for which a person has to give up his life, so that's how serious they are, that's why they lost the first Beis HaMikdash. Why? What's the connection? I mean, there are lots and lots of sins one can do. Why did they lose the Beis HaMikdash? Because they did those three sins. And the answer, says the Maharal, is that it works like this. That Avraham Avinu stood for Chesed. That was his great, he majored, if you like, in Chesed. Avraham Avinu was the famous Chesed man. And therefore, that's his chus. That's one pillar of the Beis HaMikdash. When they started doing Aroyos, Gil Aroyos is the very opposite of Chesed. Or as the Balei Hashkofa say, it's Chesed gone wrong. Yes, you can't always say yes. You've got to know when there are Gvulim. So Avraham Avinu knew exactly how to deliver his chesed. There is a time to say no. And when they started doing Gilui Aroyos, then they corrupted Avraham Avinu's middah of chesed. In fact, there is one of the Aroyos in Parashat Kedoshim, which is actually called chesed. Chesed who? So it's used in that connection. But Aroyos, when chesed goes wrong, it can land up as Aroyos. So we destroyed the first pillar, which is the pillar of Avraham, by doing Gilui Aroyos. Then the next one was, and that is the Schus of Yitzchak. Yitzchak was the Oyla Tamima, and therefore when we started serving Avodah Zorah, then of course that's the very opposite. That is the wrong sort of Korban, that sort of Avodah Zorah. It contradicts the whole idea of Yitzchak, and indeed Yaakov as well, because Avodah Zorah is the greatest sheker you can imagine. That's Avodah Zorah. It's a sheker. You're actually worshipping the wrong thing. Yaakov was the Ish Emes, and he stands for Emes. Person does Avodah Zorah. Excuse me, Avodah Zorah. Then, of course, he is corrupting the middah of Yaakov. And, of course, Shvichas Domim, as well, is a distortion of the Gevura of Yitzchak. Shvichas Domim was the middah of Esau. And once again, it contradicts both Yitzchak and Yaakov. And so says the Maharal, that really and truly, this is why the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. Because these three Averas corrupted the three middahs of the Avos, and we lost our source for the first Beis HaMikdash, therefore we lost the Beis HaMikdash. The second Beis HaMikdash was quite different. Second Beis HaMikdash, as I said, was built on the source of Klal Yisrael's efforts. And we know the stories when they marched up, 48,000, when they marched up to Eretz Yisrael, they had to contend with a lot of opposition of all the surrounding nations, for example, and they, you know, there was a lot of Mesiras Nefesh in building the Beis HaMikdash. But the fact is, when they marched, they sang, and there were tremendous achdus in Klal Yisrael. It was amazing achdus. After, you know, they had been 70 years in Golis in Bavel, now they're coming up to the Beis HaMikdash. There was a tremendous achdus in Klal Yisrael, and it's the achdus that really was, if you like, the fluid, the glue, and the fuel for building a second Beis HaMikdash, achdus of Klal Yisrael. And that was marvelous. And so they built that Beis HaMikdash on their own steam, Isarusa de la Tato, that their efforts contributed building Beis HaMikdash. Why did they lose the second Beis HaMikdash? Answer, we all know, Sinas Chinam. Sinas Chinam is the hepech, it's just the opposite, Rachdus. So when they lost their schus of the second Beis HaMikdash by practicing Sinas Chinam, or allowing Sinas Chinam to seep into their lives, of course then the whole reason building Beis HaMikdash, which was built on Rachdus, actually disappeared. So we have a great difference between the two Batei Mikdashes. And this, the Maharal explains at length, that it is something which, you know, gives us an insight into the two types of Batei Mikdashes. So this was one that this was one that differentiates the two Batei Mikdashes. And the result was those miracles that happened in Mikdash Rishon were not present in Mikdash Sheni. So we have in the second Beis HaMikdash the glorious beginnings of Torah Shebaal Peh, and the Klal Yisrael basically were reliant on Torah Shebaal Peh. Let me explain the way Rav Huttner does, and I might have mentioned this in a connection with something else before in this forum, but let me explain again. It says in the Gemara that Pa'omim shebitula shel teira zuhi kayomo. Sometimes, bitul of teira contributes or is the cause that it's mekayim, that in fact it goes on existing. And what it's talking about in particular is the bitula shel teira is when Moshe Rabbeinu took the luchos and smashed the luchos, then that was a classical case of bitula shel teira. Now we all know what happened there. What happened was that Rabbeinu shel olam obviously made the world in order that there should be a Klal Yisrael one day, there should be a practice of Torah. That was the whole objective of making that was Briyas Olam, it was all about. It wasn't the world, it was so that there should be some Ruchnias, and the ones who would be the mediators of that Ruchnias would be Klal Yisrael. And so when Moshe Rabbeinu came down the mountain and he saw them doing the Chet HaEgel, he took the Torah and smashed the Luchos. Now you would have thought that Rabbi Yisrael would be very angry. This is my whole tachlis. I want to give the world the Torah. And you take my Torah, you take these Luchos, and you smash them. On the contrary, you find that Rabbi Yisrael congratulated Moshe Rabbeinu. The last posuk in the Torah, which is Le'enei Kol Yisrael, the Rashi on that posuk says, what was Le'enei Kol Yisrael? Surprisingly enough, it's not the miracles that I mentioned in the pasuk before, it's the smashing of the luchos, Rashi says. So we end the Torah with the smashing of the luchos. That seems to have been a glorious moment, oddly enough, paradoxically. Why was that? And the answer is, Chazal tell us, that in fact, the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu smashed those luchos introduced the concept of shikras ha-Torah, introduced the idea that we are capable of forgetting the Torah. Now, if you recall, what was the objectives of the Greeks? Yeah, one of the things we say in Al-Anisim, and in the previous year we heard about Al-Anisim, Lashkichon Torah Secha. The objective of the Greeks was to make us forget the Torah. That's what they wanted. And in fact, the first machloikus in Klal Yisrael took place in the empire of Yovan between Yosef ben Yoez and Yosef ben Yochanan that we know from Pirkei Avos. The first machlokes, halachic machlokes, that took place in that time, in that period, in the middle of the Beis HaMikdash. Why did it take place then and not previously? The answer is because previously they had Nevi'im. If you had a kasha, you go to the Navi and ask them a question, they'll give you the answer. So there were no machlokes in Klal Yisrael before then. Before the middle of the second Beis HaMikdash, there were no machlokes in Klal Yisrael. The rabbis didn't argue. Can you imagine that? So, yeah, why? Because you ask a Navi. You want a Pshat and Chumash? You ask a Navi. But from then on, we had Shikras HaTorah. Why do we have Machlokes, Rabbi Yisai? We have Machlokes because we forget the Torah. We don't remember it as it was in Har Sinai. We don't have a Navi to ask. So what have you got to do? You've got to take out your Siddur and look up the Brisa of Rabbi Shmuel and find out what particular rule it covers this particular pasuk, and you work out the halacha from scratch, from, as we used to say, first principles. Use first principles, and that's what the Gemara is all about. Teaching us the first principles of deriving the Torah from the Brisa of Rabbi Shmuel and the 13 rules, and from which we get all halachas. That's how it's done. But sometimes people can apply the principles slightly differently. There is a judgment to make sometimes, and therefore you can come out with different conclusions. And that's why, Taka, you all know the Chazal, Eidem Atarim, Eidem Atamim, he says Tomei, he says Tohoi, how is that possible? And a whole list the Mishnah gives, Eidem Eidem Divrileum Chaim. That both these and these, that's Divrileum Chaim. Which means that if you use the processes correctly, if you use Torah's Moshe with the Kabbalah and the Masorah of the Brisa of Rabbi Shmuel and the other rules that we've got, you do it correctly, and Erlich, in Erlich the man, whatever your conclusion is, even if it's different from the conclusion of the next man, is Torah's Moshe. How we deal with it halachically, I will defer to another authority. We know what we do is in the next generation, they have always got to decide which one we follow in the previous generation. In other words, they decided at some point, we are going to follow Hillel against Shammai, etc. And Halachaka, Rabbi Yehuda, Mechaverov, etc. and all those rules. That's always decided later. Which of the Rishonim we follow was decided by the Achronim. And so on. That's how Halacha works. But that's different from saying that so-and-so was wrong and so-and-so was right. They're both right. Eilu ve'eilu dibidachim chayim means they're both right. And that's what was going on in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, down to the present day. Just coming back to the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu did us a tremendous favour, that by smashing the luchos, he introduced the concept of forgetfulness of the Torah. Rav Hutner explains in the most marvellous essay in his Chelek on Chanukah, which is that Moshe Rabbeinu, far from doing us harm, did us the greatest favour. And you might say to me, well, you know, he made us forget the Torah. Wouldn't it be marvellous if we never forgot anything? Had the Luchos not been broken, says Chazal, we wouldn't have forgotten any part of the Torah, not an iota of the Torah. So wouldn't that have been better? The answer is no. It wouldn't have been better. How would we have survived 2,000 years of Golus had there been a whopping book on the shelf with all the laws? Yeah, actually nailed down. What has kept us alive over 2,000 years is what's called Milchamto Shel Torah. It's the Vikuach. Go into any Beis HaMedrash, maybe this Beis HaMedrash, yeah, during the day, and hear the noise going on here. Hear the Milchamto Shel Torah going on. And that's truly something magnificent. That Milchamto Shel Torah means that we get inspired to the present day. He's got his view, he's got another view, we've got all Rishonim, we've got Achronim, if a person can contribute his own. And that is Milchamto Shel, that's what's kept it alive. So the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu smashed those nuchos and that we have the machloikis is a good thing, not a bad thing. It means that the Torah is dynamic, that the Torah continues as a living thing rather than just an enormous book on the shelf where you can look up anything you like, yeah, and you get the answer. That means that the Torah would have been ignored completely. And that, of course, pardon? Yes, well, Google, you'd look at Google now, but I won't mention it. That's the point. And that's what was going on in the second Beis HaMikdash. So the miracles were still there in the second Beis HaMikdash. And in fact, we know, because they'll tell us, that during the time of Shimon HaTzadik, the Ner Maravi stayed alight all night, all the time. And then it did so on an intermittent basis until 40 years before the destruction. That's, you know, quite a long time. We're talking about nearly 400 years. Sorry, 400 years. That this miracle still occurred intermittently in the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, this was, so to speak, the champion of Torah Sheval Peh. And the fact is that although this particular Ness, the Ness of Chanukah, was not a Nitni Kosev, we asked before that the significance of Nitni Kosev, that it was written and became part of the Torah or wasn't. And the other question that we asked was, what about the war? We don't seem to do anything about the war. And the answer is that the whole war, the war was fought on the basis that we should be Mekayim Torah. That was the whole purpose of the war. And that's best signified by the Chanukah light. Because the Chanukah light actually started, not at Chanukah, it started in the Mishkan. Because when Aaron didn't bring the didn't bring one of the gifts to the Mishkan, Aaron was a bit upset that, you know, he doesn't have a mitzvah like all the other Nesiim have. And the Rabbeinu Shlomo told him, through Moshe Rabbeinu, that your gift is greater than the gift of all the Nesiim. Because the gift of the Nesiim will come to an end with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, two Beit HaMikdashes. But your gift will always go on. What's your gift? Your gift is lighting the menorah. Ah, but on the other hand, the menorah also comes to an end when the Beis HaMikdash came to an end. The answer is that the menorah of Chanukah is an extension of the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. So that means that the menorah that we light on Chanukah is still an extension of the menorah that Aaron HaKohen lit in the Beis HaMikdash. It's part of a hemshech, and the hemshech, of course, is one that we keep today and is a very great symbol of Torah today. So the reason why we keep the menorah, and that's the symbol of Torah, and we don't keep anything about the war, is because the war was fought in order to maintain the symbol of the menorah, which is Torah. That's the whole purpose. So we don't have something special or something different to celebrate the war. The war was, in fact, to keep the Torah. In other words, what happened at that moment was that the Hashmonaim decided that under the oppression of the Greeks, we're not going to live like this anymore, and we've got to do something about our lives, and therefore they took their lives in their hands, Mesiras Nefesh Gomor, and they decided to wage war on the Greeks. And as you know, the Rabbi Shalom actually delivered a most amazing ness that they did win this war, and therefore they could go back to the Beis HaMikdash, light the menorah, which is the symbol of Torah, and therefore this is a great chizuk to us all. It's a little bit possibly early for Chanukah Shir, but it's the last opportunity that I'll have to talk to you before Chanukah, so I thought we'd do that. And that is the tale of the two houses, two Beit HaMikdashes. May it stand us in good stead. I wish you all a very good day.